John, and welcome back. This is the second live Ask John question and answer session where you can call in and ask me questions. This is a really good time to clear up any issues that came up from the last core lesson that we had 2 days ago, any questions that arise about how to implement any of the items on the checklist or just anything we talked about in the last core session. You can call in and talk to me. We have a couple of 800 numbers. If you're in the U.S., you can call 1-877-662-3716. That's 1-877-662-3716. If you're in Australia, you can call 1-800-646-289. That's 1-800-646-289. I've got Neil on Hightower with me. Neil, are you there?
Yeah, how you doing tonight, John?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing really good.
Good.
Looking forward to answering some of these questions tonight.
Okay, good. I know we have a couple of people already online with their hand up. By the way, when you call in, if you have a question, you press 1, and that way we know that you have a question. That's your way of raising a hand. So we do have one or two people at the moment already with questions. And I don't think we have nearly as many questions as we had last week, which I think is really good. I feel like we've done a really great job over the last week of answering pretty much everybody's questions. We've had hundreds and hundreds of questions. And it looks like people are really understanding the program much better and settling in really nicely, which is great. But I know there was some kind of confusion about different things that we spoke about. So, Neil, if you want to tell me a little bit about what some of the questions are, we can get started.
Sure, John. Well, to get started, we've had some quite a few questions come up about flaxseed oil, essential fatty acids in general. So, and I know that's such a very important part of this, the dynamics here, so I wanted to go over a couple of those. The first one is from Darlene in Salt Lake City, Utah, here in the States. And she says, I've been using ground flaxseed, and it tends to cause an upset stomach. Is this normal, and will I adjust?
I would not say that's normal to have an upset stomach. We are going to be talking about digestion in the next class and how to improve your digestion and how important it is to improve your digestion and also why people's digestion in general are not optimal and all the different problems that causes. So hang out till next class when we talk about digestion and see if that changes at all. Now, in general, when it comes to omega-3 essential fatty acids, I feel that one way or the other, you have to include them in your diet. If one avenue doesn't work, then choose another. So if ground flaxseed is not working for you, try chia seeds. If chia seeds aren't working for you, then try taking fish oil capsules. Again, what you want to take is you want fish oils that are capsules that are derived from small fish, and the best one being krill oil. But one way or the other, you have to get your omega-3. So if you're taking it through fish oil, I recommend you take at least 10 grams of fish oil. Not necessarily 10 grams of omega-3, but 10 grams of fish oil. And that usually equates to 10 capsules, because usually a capsule is a gram. And a lot of people say, well, my doctor, or it says on the bottle, take 3 grams. Number one, again, always do what your doctor recommends. But keep in mind that this is not a drug. It's not a medication. It's not like taking something from a pharmaceutical drug that's for a prescription. This is oil. All it is fat. So if you were to eat a piece of fish, it would have 10, 20, maybe even 30 grams of fat, so which is the equivalent of 30 capsules of fish oil. The only problem is the fat's been corrupted. And if it's deep fried, it's totally useless, and it becomes a very toxic fat. So when I'm recommending 10 grams of fat, it's the equivalent of a small portion of fish. That's all it is, nothing more. It's not an overdose of drugs. So, and you need these fat because fat covers, other than water, fat is the most prevalent molecule in the body. And it coats every single cell of our body. Our brain cells are 65% fat. So all the fat that you're taking in becomes the fats in your cells. And if you're taking in toxic, rancid fats, then your cell walls are not going to be functioning optimally. If your cell walls are not functioning optimally, your body is not functioning optimally. It's that simple. And that type of problem where your cell walls are not functioning properly means that your cells are not able to communicate with hormones, which can cause things like elevated insulin levels, metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes, depression, and heart disease, elevated triglycerides, high blood pressure, inflammation. All kinds of problems are caused because the cells are not functioning optimally. So you want to take omega-3. So for me, the easiest way is to just grind flax seeds every day. Now, flax seeds, again, omega-3s in general, the fat gets corrupted very easily by sunlight, air, and heat. And so once you've ground the flax seeds or linseeds, once you've ground them, the oil starts to go rancid. It can last about a day. So that's why I recommend that you buy whole linseeds so the fat stays intact, and then you grind them every day. Now, if you eat the linseeds whole, they're just going to go right through your system. You're not going to be able to digest the fat. But try to get a variety. Now, there's other ways to get omega-3s from your food. It's just not optimal. For example, cold water fish will have omega-3s, but again, omega-3s get destroyed through heat. So when you cook fish, you're left with about 30% of the fats not getting corrupted or destroyed. If you deep fry it, then it's all useless and it becomes a very toxic experience. Sashimi or sushi has a lot of the fats intact, but there are some downsides to eating raw fish. Omega-3 enriched eggs is a good one. That's where you actually feed your chickens, and farmers will do this. And if you look on the packet, it'll say omega-3 enriched eggs. That's when you actually feed your chickens flax seeds or linseeds, and then the fat in the eggs has more omega-3s in it. Then if you soft boil the egg, then a good portion of the fats will not get destroyed. If you fry the egg or scramble the egg, most of the fats will get destroyed. Grass-fed meat has more omega-3s in it than conventionally farmed grain-fed meat because grain doesn't have omega-3s in it. Grass does. Wheat, which brings me to things like wheatgrass, salads, they have trace amounts of omega-3s. But if you eat enough of that, it does add up also to omega-3s. So I say use a variety. Take some fish oil, sprinkle some flax seeds, eat some cold water fish. There are some nuts that have omega-3s. I recommend with nuts that you soak them first. That's something we'll talk about another time, actually, where you soak them for a while, because nuts also have a component on the outside of it that inhibits your body's ability to digest and assimilate the nut. It's an enzyme blocker that blocks the enzymes from digesting the nut. When you soak it, that goes away. But if you roast the nut, then you lose the fat. So you kind of have to educate yourself on how to get omega-3s, and you just have to at least become aware of it and ask yourself at every meal, am I getting any omega-3s? Because I still do that. 7 years down the road, I'm looking, when I have a meal, I'm looking, am I getting any omega-3s? And I would say that maybe one meal a day I don't get omega-3s, but every other meal, there's some form of omega-3s.
Okay, and just for our friend Semi in the USA, just to go over this one more time, John, so if they're going for the ground flax, how much of that per day? I know you say sprinkle a little bit of that. Exactly how much of that are they supposed to be shooting for to get the required amount of omega-3s?
I'm saying that if you take 2 tablespoons of ground of flax seeds, grind them up during the day. That's probably like a half a coffee grinder. Grind that up and sprinkle it through your food throughout the day. That's good.
That'll be enough.
That's a good amount. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. I think we covered just about all of the flax, essential fatty acid, omega-3 questions for right now. So,
I understand how it can be confusing, but it's a simple thing. You just want to ask yourself at every meal, am I getting omega-3s? And just continue to do that, become aware of omega-3s. And your whole system over time, it'll take about 6 months for your cells to get coated with this omega-3 and for your cells to function more properly and to communicate with the hormones more properly. And there's just so many benefits that you don't even know in terms of how you feel and your energy and the way your body moves and the way you think. And in just so many different ways, your energy is going to be just tremendously improved.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, we have another one here from Richard, and he just wants to know what your thoughts are on skim milk.
Okay. Milk in general, more and more I'm finding that I'm less and less enthusiastic about milk because when they pasteurize the milk, first of all, if the milk is conventionally farmed, there's hormones and pesticides in the grains that the cows eat, and also the cows themselves get shot up with hormones to grow bigger. All of those things get passed on to you. Then when you pasteurize the milk, a lot of the nutrients become denatured, and you can't use them. For example, the calcium becomes denatured, and then when you can't assimilate the calcium, it just builds up as calcium deposits in your joints and causes calcification. And David Wolf says that founder of the raw food movement, or the raw food guru, I was listening to him speak one day, and he said that aging is really caused by calcification. And calcification is caused by getting the wrong type of calcium. The wrong type of calcium is a calcium that you can't digest and assimilate because it's been denatured. So when you pasteurize milk, a lot of the nutrients become denatured. The calcium deposits cause inflammation, and then the hormones that get released as a result of the inflammation activate your fat programs. So more and more I'm looking for alternatives to milk in general. Yogurt I still recommend because it has friendly bacteria and it doesn't have the milk sugar, which is called lactose. And a lot of people can't digest lactose, and that causes problems too. So I'm always looking for alternatives to milk. As I mentioned in the last class, I just 2 days ago made my very first batch of almond milk, and I thought it was phenomenal, and I was amazed at how easy it was. And so I'm developing a special Gabriel Method milk, nut milk, and what it is it's three quarters of a cup of almonds and a quarter of a cup of sunflowers, all raw, and you just soak them overnight. And then in the morning you take one of those hand mixers. You soak them in 5 cups of water. And then in the morning you just take a hand mixer and you mix it up real good and then drain it through a cheesecloth, and you've got milk. You've got about a liter's worth of milk. And then what I add 1 tablespoon of coconut palm sugar. So I think that's I'm starting to like that sugar. And then a pinch of healthy salt, like Himalayan salt. And that's it. And you've got a really healthy liter of milk where the fat from the almonds is actually healthier than if you were to eat the almonds themselves, because it doesn't have those enzyme blockers anymore. The taste is amazing, very filling, very, very nutritious, and very live and bioavailable, and very affordable, too. I think it works out to be something like $3 to $4 a liter, which is as cheap as any of the other types of milks that you buy. Maybe conventionally farmed milk is a little bit cheaper, but then you end up paying for medications and things like that as a result of the inflammation. So, I'm looking for alternatives to milk, and that's my choice right now. I use that in smoothies. I made an incredible blueberry smoothie with that. I use that in the Johnny Chow recipe that I talk about, where you add the protein powder, nuts, seeds, and fruit to. And also in other kind of desserts that I've been making, and pretty much anywhere that you use milk, you can use this. And so that's what I recommend. And with recipes like this, in general, people say, I don't have time. You don't need time. You just need a little bit of organization, because it takes 5 minutes to put the almonds in water and soak them, and then another 5 minutes in the morning when you wake up to grind them and create the milk. So all in all, it's about 10 minutes worth of time. You just have to remember to soak them overnight. That's the only key. So that's what I'm recommending for milk. If you don't want to do that, look for store-bought almond milk. Oat milk is also better than conventional milk. Coconut milk's also better. So that would be my preference. Number one is you make your own almond milk. Number two, store-bought almond milk, as long as they don't put too much sugar in it. Some of them they put rice malt and sugars in it. Oat milk would be third, or actually coconut milk would be third, and then oat milk would be fourth.
And do you have a position on raw milk, John?
Raw milk, when you say as an unpasteurized?
Right.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of controversy about raw milk, right. And I don't even think it's legal in a lot of places. But nutritionally, it's infinitely healthier if it's fresh, and it comes from grass fed cows. It's infinitely healthier. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, well, can we switch over to insulin? I mean, that was a class we had last week, and we've got some questions about insulin. that some people would like to know. Let's see. Robin says, I've had glucose tolerance tests recently, which have been within normal levels. Does this mean that I do not have insulin resistance, or are the two not related?
No, they are related, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you don't have some degree of insulin resistance. Really, the best way to tell if you have insulin resistance is how tired you feel after a meal. Like if 2 hours later, if you're craving sugar and then you eat a meal with bread and sugar and then 2 hours later you're tired, it's saying that there's blood sugar problems. And that's the real issue, is the blood sugar problem. So you have to kind of go by what you feel, not so much by what the tests are. There's a lot of examples like that. Like a lot of people, you can test your cortisol levels and they'll come up normal, but what they're not testing, for example, is the cortisol levels inside your fat cells, which in most people are elevated when their fat programs are on. They don't have tests for things like that right now. So with blood sugar and insulin in general, you can tell by the way you feel if your body's becoming more sensitive to insulin, because you don't get tired after a meal and you don't get as hungry as frequently. And when you are hungry, you're not craving the same types of junk foods.
A lot of these things are moving targets, aren't they, John?
Very much so. Very much so.
Kind of hard to pin results of a test, yes, I do, or no, I don't have this or that condition.
Yeah.
Did we have any callers that we wanted to take right now?
We do. We've got six callers in queue at the moment. The first one's Margaret from Brisbane. So, Aaron, you want to put Margaret in? Okay, Margaret, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Margaret.
Yes. How are you?
How are you? Good. How are you?
Good.
Good. How's it?
I just wanted to know about the nuts. You've mentioned almonds and so forth, but I just wondered whether there are any other type of nuts that have the same effect or whatever.
Which nuts do I recommend?
Should be eating.
Almonds actually don't even have omega-3s. I think it's more of an omega-6 and omega-9, but it's still a healthy nut. Walnuts and hazelnuts, Brazil nuts, and macadamia nuts all have a fair degree of omega-3 in them, but again, you have to get them raw, and best if you soak them. Because,
right.
But when they're roasted, you're going to lose that fat. And if you like a roasted nut, what you can do, and this is something we'll talk, is you can dehydrate them. For a couple of $100, you can buy a dehydrator. And what a dehydrator does is it cooks at a very low temperature. It never goes below 40 degrees Celsius. Or above 40 degrees Celsius. So the healthiest nuts. And by the way, if you're in Brisbane, there's a company. I think they're in Byron Bay. Their nuts are called To Die For. Number two die for is what they're called. They are amazing. Last time I was in Brisbane giving a seminar, somebody brought some nuts to me, and I just couldn't. They were amazing. What they do is exactly this. They soak them. So that it breaks the enzyme inhibitors around the nut, and then they dehydrate them. So it tastes crispy like a roasted nut, but it's still bioactive.
Oh, okay.
They're expensive, but you can do this yourself. It's cheaper if you spend a couple hundred dollars buying a dehydrator, soak the nuts, and then dehydrate them, and maybe even put a little tamari on them if you want, and they're perfect. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so dehydrator is also great. I've got three little kids, and they just love it when you slice up some bananas, put some any kind of fruit, you put it in there overnight, and they just eat it up. So, I mean, if you have kids, it's also a really great thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of things next week. I'm in the middle of making a recipe book, and next week is dehydrator week when we make recipes on the dehydrator. And there's just so many different things you can do. You can make muesli bars, brownies. There's so many yummy. Oh, flax crackers. They're really yummy with a dehydrator. This is a great way, by the way, everyone, to get your flax seeds in. So you soak your flax seeds overnight. And then you add those flax seeds with some flaxseed meal and mix it up with a little bit of water so it becomes a paste. Then you season it to taste. So what we add is we add onions, tomatoes, mushrooms, garlic, and some Himalayan salt, and just make it like a paste. And then you put it on the dehydrator overnight, and then in the morning it becomes a cracker. Where the omega-3s are still intact, and it's crispy, and you can use it to dip with hummus or salads or whatever you want. You can just nosh on them during the day, and it's a great way to get omega-3s. So those are flax crackers. Go do a little bit of research, and we'll talk more about this over the next couple of weeks, especially after next week when I do my dehydrator week. We'll talk a lot about it. But do a little bit of research about dehydrators and look for a recipe for flax crackers. And, again, dehydrators are not that expensive. They're a couple $100. Look for a recipe for flax crackers. They're so easy to make, and you can just kind of make it your own. All you need is to create a paste and dehydrate the paste is all you got to do. So look for that, and that'll really take care of that crunch that you need, that you may be looking for with other nuts.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you.
Okay, cool. You're welcome, Margaret. We'll speak soon. Take care.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, the next caller, Neil, we have Tracy from San Diego.
Hi, John.
Hi, Tracy. How are you?
I'm doing great. Really, really enjoyed your discussion on insulin. That clarified so much for me. But it also brings up some more questions. And I know you're going to have a discussion on sweeteners soon. But I do have some interim questions. One is I've been using stevia a lot, and one of the ways I guess that it's being marketed here in the U.S. is along with maltodextrin to make it a little more palatable.
Yes.
And I've looked up a little bit of information on maltodextrin, but I can't, and I know it's a polysaccharide, and I know it's used in a lot of things, and I'm starting to see it more on other labels. Can you tell me what its impact is on insulin and glucose levels and what its glycemic index is? And I know it's processed, so it's probably not good, but I'd love your thoughts.
I don't remember what the glycemic index for maltodextrin is, but I do remember doing a lot of research on it and finding that it's very processed, and there was just I found nothing redeeming about it as a sugar. And I've seen those stevias where they mix in maltodextrin, and I think to myself, well, what's the point, you know? But you can buy stevia that's just stevia leaf extract and then mix it with your sweetener of choice. So what the current sweetener, we're in the process of developing a proprietary sweetener, you know, just a mixed blend sweetener that you can use with pretty much everything. And the ratio that I'm using is 20 parts coconut palm sugar, 20 parts xylitol, and 1 part stevia, 1 to 2 parts stevia. So that's all you need. If you do more than that in the stevia, it's going to have a bitter aftertaste. Now, the reason I do this ratio is coconut palm sugar, to me, is the healthiest sugar that I've seen out there because I could feel, in terms of your digestion, it does digest well. It is a raw food, but it's a little bit too high on the glycemic index. So because it's too high in the glycemic index, it's about a 35 when xylitol, for example, is a 7. So when you mix it with xylitol and stevia, it's going to lower the glycemic index. I don't like to take too much xylitol because xylitol is processed, even though it's very low in the glycemic index, and it does have some other healthy qualities, like it helps your body absorb calcium, which is really important, and we talked about that a little bit. And then the stevia is great, but has a bitter aftertaste. But when you combine them in that ratio, you're getting a relatively low glycemic index. I'm guessing the glycemic index is going to be like around a 18 or something like that, which is great. And you're getting mostly healthy sugars, and you're not getting a bitter aftertaste.
So if you
think of like a tablespoon of coconut palm sugar, a tablespoon of xylitol, and maybe just a pinch, like a quarter teaspoon of stevia, try that ratio. If you use more stevia and less of the other two, that's brilliant. So you work out what works for you. But
we'll try that, and we'll see if we can get the family converted over to that mixture.
I'll tell you what, you will be able to get the family converted if you get the ratio right, because you can't tell the difference between that and sugar. There's just no way to tell the difference. And, you know, when you put it in things like we made, it was my daughter's birthday yesterday, and we went in, we made a cake with those sugars. It was a chocolate nut cake and had it with vanilla icing, and we used all that sugar, and I brought it into school. There was 17 kids, and they just all wolfed it down. Nobody complained.
Awesome.
Yeah, and they were 9-year-old kids. Nobody complained that the sugar was no good. You know, so yeah,
cool.
You will
that's
definitely
good. So
get
it's 20 parts coconut palm sugar, 20 parts xylitol to 1 part stevia, right?
Yeah, try that. Or roughly, if you don't want to measure parts like that, just a tablespoon coconut palm sugar, tablespoon xylitol, quarter teaspoon of stevia.
Oh, that sounds easy. Good. Okay,
yeah.
I'll give that one a try. And again, thanks for this. I think that there's going to be a lot more questions that I'll have over the next few days on sweeteners, and I'll look forward to any other discussions that we have on that. So thank you for that.
I'm totally here for that. I'm very passionate
awesome.
About sweeteners. So.
have a wonderful evening.
You too.
And I'll listen up now.
Okay. Thanks, Tracy. See ya. All right. The next caller is Penny from Cairns.
Hello.
Penny. Hi, Penny.
Hello. It's Henny. We spoke.
It was Henny. I'm sorry. That's okay. I'm looking on my screen. It says Penny. They put Penny in. I know. We've spoken before, haven't we, Henny?
Yes. Last week.
Last week. Yeah.
We spoke last week briefly.
Yeah.
I've got a question. I have had 2 diabetes. Not very long. Not since
yeah.
very long. Yeah. So
yeah.
There's a few issues. I'm also vegetarian all my life. Yeah. So
right.
when it comes to, I'm looking at reversing the insulin
yeah.
resistance.
Okay.
Like I'm not on insulin, not anymore.
Okay.
I've got myself off that. So.
Well, let me stop.
Like,
wait, stop 1 second, Henny. Let me just ask you a question, okay? When were you on insulin?
In hospital. I was in hospital for something else. And
yeah.
They said I was diabetic and immediately started insulin injections. And to tell
oh.
you the truth, this was a complete shock because I have a, on my father's side, everybody's got type 2 diabetes.
Uh-huh.
Now, since I was a child, I have always looked out for is my family has got a completely shocking diet. So that's why I went vegetarian, yeah?
Wait, say that
so,
again. I missed you. Why did you go vegetarian? I missed that.
Oh, my family.
Yeah.
I am now 55. Yeah.
Yeah.
So my family, or everyone on my family, has a completely shocking diet.
Okay.
So it
okay.
doesn't surprise me.
Okay.
That
so
they,
all right. So okay. So Henny. So
I've always
so you,
looked out for
yeah.
it. I've had blood tests.
Yeah.
Especially for diabetes, every year,
yeah.
and it's always been perfect until
okay.
2 years ago.
Okay.
And I think that was caused by severe stress. Yeah?
Okay. Well, that, it would.
Like
stress
when they
would
said,
do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
When they said I was a diabetic, I was completely shocked. I said, oh.
Okay,
Okay,
Henny, let me stop you for 1 second. A couple important points, okay? If you're undergoing severe stress and you get a blood sugar test, you know, a blood sugar test, it's very likely that they might say that you're type 2 diabetic, but there's a difference between being a type 2 diabetic and a type 1 diabetic. And let me just explain that for everybody because I think it's really, really important. And this is a type 1 diabetic, which is not you, a type 1 diabetic is a legitimate medical illness where the pancreas does not produce insulin. That's a dysfunction, a misfunction in the way your body works. Your pancreas, which normally produces insulin, doesn't do it anymore. That means you need insulin if you're a type 1 diabetic. Now, type 2 diabetic is just someone who's insulin resistant, and when insulin resistance gets to a certain point, they arbitrarily label you type 2 diabetic. But you might just be that. Your blood sugar and your insulin resistance might just be that for just a short period of time because you're under severe stress. And when you're under severe stress, cortisol is telling your system to stop listening to insulin. So you're not going to be managing your blood sugar during a period of severe stress. And then they label you as type 2 diabetic, and people think, wow, I've got an illness, the same thing as like type 1 diabetic. And it's not. It's just a level of insulin resistance. That's all it is, nothing more. So when you were in the hospital and when you were in extreme stress, you reached that threshold where your body was not able to handle glucose at a certain level, and then they label you type 2 diabetic. So type 2 diabetic is an organic process that you have to look at and really work with, and is my experience, gets reversed relatively easily. I don't know how many people, but to me, it must be in the thousands of people that are out there that I've talked to or communicated with that used to be type 2 diabetic and aren't anymore, aren't labeled type 2 diabetic simply because their insulin sensitivity got to the point where they no longer were arbitrarily diagnosed as type 2 diabetic. So if you were in the hospital and in stress, that's what was happening to you. And that's why they gave you insulin. Now tell me now where you are 2 years down the road. Where are you now?
Well, yes, I've had a number of hospitalizations in the, you know, since then. Yes.
Okay.
For various reasons, and that's always extremely stressful. Not only because being in hospital, but also because I practically cannot eat there because I cannot get what my normal diet is at all or anywhere near. Then also I have this diabetes label, Visim, which immediately, like, I cannot eat any food that they serve because I eat very natural, and they don't have anything like that. Next thing, all they serve me practically is chemicals,
Yeah.
It's really quite crazy, and I cannot eat that as well.
Are you on any medication at all for your type 2 diabetes right now?
Yes, I have to take it because otherwise Diabex, you know.
Diabex. Okay.
Not any injections or anything.
No.
Even though they always want to do that, how the medical system is. Yeah.
Okay, well, continue to do everything your doctor says. I always say that, and I'm going to say that again. Always, always work with your doctor. Never do anything that's against your doctor's advice. And don't take my advice if it goes without checking with your doctor. That's the first thing I want to say. But I also want to say work with your doctor now. Okay, you're on a path where the cells of your body will become more sensitive to insulin. That's the solution. The treatment usually for type 2 diabetes is to increase insulin to lower blood sugar because elevated blood sugar is the symptom, not the cause. The cause is your cells being not sensitive to insulin. So you are getting your cells more sensitive to insulin by learning how to manage stress, by taking omega-3 fatty acids, and by living a more energetic, passionate life. You are helping your cells become more sensitive to insulin. So you need to work with your doctor. If you're taking insulin supplements, it will help you lower your blood sugar, but it also puts your body in fat storage mode and makes it very difficult to burn fat. It's just a fact. As we talked about last week. That's why, Henny, you have got to work with your doctor now. Okay, I would like you to work with them on every couple of weeks or as often as you can see him to see if there's any way that you can work with him to wean you off the medication if and only if your insulin sensitivity is improving and only with his blessing. But when you get to the point where your insulin sensitivity has improved to the point where you no longer need the medication, your doctor gives you the blessing to go off of it, it will become infinitely easier for you to burn fat.
Yes,
because
that's
you're
what
not
I'm working on.
That's what you're working on. Okay.
That's why I'm here.
This is what we're doing.
I'm here
right,
with
so
you.
Right. So just keep. Let's
yeah,
just keep
you know,
working. Okay.
Yeah, I'm. I wanted to ask you about the wheatgrass. I saw in your store. On the website.
Yeah.
I saw that you have this little hand wheatgrass juicer.
Yes.
But you cannot bring that to Australia, can you?
They haven't. I don't know the answer to that question at the moment. But if not, they do have them here in Australia. If you contact my office, we'll recommend one to you. But they have them here in Australia. They cost about $80, $90, something like that. And
yeah.
And yeah, they are available in Australia, definitely.
Okay, well, that's very interesting. Because, that's good to know. So that is the helpline, is it?
Contact the helpline, and we'll get some information to you, okay?
Okay. Oh, well, that's good.
All right,
and
good.
The omega-3s, I mean, that's very limiting. Like when you're talking about the nuts, yeah? You were saying earlier you'd have to have nuts in the shell, isn't it?
No, not in the shell. They just have to be raw. You can't eat the nuts in the shell, no.
You have to shell them.
Of course you have to shell your nuts, honey. But if you're talking for omega-3s, just grind up some flax seeds every day, okay? If these flax seeds are cheap,
yeah, I do that.
Grind them up every day and sprinkle them on your food. It'll be a lifesaver for you. It'll really help get your cells more sensitive to insulin, okay?
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
My pleasure, sweetheart. We'll talk soon, okay?
Yeah, right. Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
All right. Bye. Okay, the next question I have is from Sammy in Key West. Sammy, are you
there?
Hello?
Can you hear me? Hello?
I can hear you.
So I have a few questions, and general ones. So first one is about if somebody's on medical marijuana, how does smoking pot affect fat programs?
Yeah, well, I haven't done too much research on that, but I did maybe do some research when I was a teenager, even without knowing it. But I just from thinking about it, since you asked me the question, smoking marijuana is going to increase the toxic load on your body, so I would really focus on ways to detoxify. I think it's going to be really, really important for you to drink either a lot of juices, like celery-type juices and wheatgrass juices, and lots of water, things that really flush out your toxins. And then also, I think marijuana gives you the munchies, too, which can be a little bit of a problem. It obviously stimulates your appetite artificially. So that can be a little bit of a drawback, too, I'd imagine.
And does it activate like similar to aspartame where there's a neurotransmitter that turns on fat programs, or is it something else going on?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never done any research on it. But
okay.
I do know I don't know if it activates your fat programs, but it just activates your appetite. So those two are not necessarily one and the same. But I would definitely focus on doing as much fresh juicing as possible to detoxify.
Okay, second question is about food combining. Any recommendations in terms of your Gabriel Method friendly meals about food combining?
Yeah. This leads me to another question, which, by the way, Neil, I saw on the sheet that we were going to address. And that relates to, really, when you're talking food combining, you're really talking about how to combine grains or dead carbs, which are man-made foods like grains and starchy type foods. How do you combine those? That's really the real issue, and I'll tell you why. Because the other foods that are not man-made, such as fruit and meat, get digested in your stomach in an acid environment. Grains require an alkaline environment. So when you eat meat, fruit, salad can be digested in anything. But when you eat meat and fruit, it's going to create an acid environment in your stomach in order to digest it. Now, when you put grains in it, the enzymes that digest grains are activated in an alkaline environment, and it also changes the acidity of your stomach. And then what happens is you get a sort of digestion conundrum, where your stomach's not acid enough to activate the acid enzymes or to break down the food, and then it's not alkaline enough to activate the alkaline enzymes that break down the breads and the starches. So your meal just kind of sits there and it doesn't digest properly. So acid foods like bread, like meat and fruit will also go through your system quicker. So it's better to eat pretty much all the Gabriel type foods. It's better to eat first. And then afterwards, if you're still craving bread and kind of like the man-made dead carbs, eat them afterwards. Because the fruit and the meat will go through your stomach a little bit quicker, and then it'll allow for the bread to be broken down in an alkaline environment.
Okay. And that leads me.
I just want to say one thing. That leads me to another question somebody's had, which was, you know, how do you wean yourself off of bread and pizza, you know, and like man-made type of dead foods without it being a diet? And that's a really, really great question, and it's, to me, it's the same answer. I always say keep the focus on adding foods. Well, add the Gabriel foods first. You know, when you're eating lunch, make a huge salad with meat, chicken, fish, whatever it is. Put the ground linseeds on. Then if you still want bread afterwards, have the bread afterwards. You may not over time. What happened with me and what happens with a lot of people is over time you lose your taste for them. And what I did when I found that I was losing my taste for bread but that I still had the habit of it, I used visualization to create a negative association with the bread, and then it weaned me off of it forever. And I did the same thing about 3 months later afterwards with sugar, and now I found that it's just there's no effort whatsoever. There's no thought whatsoever. I simply don't go near those foods. I don't crave them. They don't feel like foods to me. I don't think about them as foods. So the way to start is by adding those foods, adding the Gabriel foods first, making sure your body's nourished. Those foods are very easy to digest and get digested faster. Eat those foods first. You'll nourish your body and then have the other foods afterwards.
And will you make those particular visualizations available to us?
I certainly will, if that's what you want. But I don't want to do it yet. I'll tell you why, because I want your system to naturally start to lose their dependency on that type of food and to be introduced to foods that nourish your body better. And then the cravings are going to go away on their own, especially if your blood sugar is becoming more stable. Your cravings are going to go away on its own, and then the visualization will be extremely effective. Right now, there's a number of reasons why we crave dead foods, breads and sugars and things like that. One is we become addicted to it. Two is we develop yeast and parasites in our stomach that live off it and cause cravings. And three is we don't know how to regulate our blood sugar. So I'm taking care of all those things over the next couple of weeks. Next week is digestion. So we're going to take care of things like yeast and parasites. And then last week we talked about how to keep your blood sugar stable. And so over time, you're not going to be craving them for chemical reasons. Then there's a slight habit that's left, and the visualization will be very effective. So I'm thinking week five is when we're going to do that.
Okay. And then what happens to the toxins and the hormones that are released into the system as the fat burns off?
You got to flush them out with water and juices. You urinate them out, and that's why when people say, well, I drink a lot of water at night, I'm going to be going to the bathroom all night, I'm just like, yeah, but guess what? You're going to be eliminating the byproducts of your fat burning, and if you don't do that, your body's not going to burn fat. So it goes in your blood system, you urinate it out.
All right, so it doesn't get, like, say, cortisol doesn't get reabsorbed into other cells to keep you stressed and fat.
No.
And a couple of sugar questions, wondering what about rapadura, sucanat, or date sugar.
Yeah, all three of those are, for me, too high on the glycemic index. They release sugar too quickly.
Are they reasonable substitutes if you can't find coconut palm sugar?
I would mix them with stevia to balance it out, because then you're not going to need as much, and then it's not going to have as big an insulin effect.
Okay.
Try that. And you should be able to find coconut palm sugar and xylitol at pretty much any health food store, pretty much anywhere at this point.
All right. And then I had a comment to add. Some research that I've done about greens and green for life and green smoothies, people that have gone like heavily on green smoothies have been able to reduce their insulin intake for type 1 diabetes.
I am aware of that, and if you go to our site, you know, we've got a new store now at The Gabriel. Not instead of going to GabrielMethod.com, put it the in front of it. So it's TheGabrielMethod.com/store. We've got a video that I watched a while back that says that was, I think it's called Raw for 30 Days. It's about people that supposedly were able to reverse type 1 diabetes by going on a raw food diet. Now, I don't recommend people going on a raw food diet, first of all, because it's too extreme, it's unsustainable. But I do recommend people add raw food to flush out toxins and to get your system working well. Whether or not it can reverse type 1 diabetes, I can't verify that, but it's a documentary. It's worth watching. So, yeah, I have heard things like that.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
I've been on the HCG diet. Are you familiar with that one?
Yeah. What about it?
Well, I guess I was kind of curious about how it sort of recalibrates the hypothalamus to regulate some of the hormones in a particular way so that you are more fat burning, and while on the diet you're releasing 1,500 to 4,000 calories of fat a day. And my challenge has been, and you've definitely enlightened me around this, is getting off of it, basically having to get back on it just to regulate what I had lost. And
yeah, I'd never, ever, ever recommend interfering with your hormones. Because when you interfere with your hormones, you're not addressing the root cause. You know, you can introduce hormones that will help you burn fat quicker, but then the second you go off them, your body adjusts. You can introduce hormones or neurotransmitters that will help you feel better, but the second you go off it, there's a rebound effect. You have to address the root cause, and it definitely does not address the root cause for most people. So I recommend staying with an approach that focuses on overall health, vitality, and happiness, and then you're dealing with the real causes.
All right. Thank you so much,
cool.
John.
My pleasure, Sammy. All right, we'll talk soon. Okay, I've got my next caller is Jacqueline. And Jacqueline, I don't know where you're from. Where are you from, Jacqueline?
Hi, John. I'm from Canberra.
Hi. Okay, good. Welcome. Is it cold over there? It's cold, isn't it?
It was minus 6 this morning, so I think that's pretty cold.
Yeah, that's cold. Yeah, Canberra's just always cold.
It's okay. So when I read your book, I intellectually understand about why diets don't work and all that kind of stuff, and I'm with it. I'm totally there. But when I then go out with my work colleagues or something on a Friday night, and we go in and have a few drinks, and then I'll weigh myself that week, and I'll put on weight, and my body will say, well, you know, you didn't deserve to lose weight this week because you didn't eat the salads all the time, and you were bad. And I really still have that, you know, good, bad belief going on. You know, it's still a calories in, calories out thing for me. And
I know.
Say intellectually, I know it's not true, but, you know, there's just that belief there, and I'm really finding that that's probably one of my biggest issues.
Well, you want to know how to apply this in the field.
Is there a visualization? Are there some power words or something like that I can just try to break this?
The first thing I want to say is that your body's never saying you don't deserve this, okay? Your body's just being tricked into activating the fat programs, probably from stress. I know people in Canberra work very, very hard and late hours, and so so stress is probably a big issue. So what I would do is just say, okay, this is where you are right now. Stay wherever you can with the focus on adding foods that have the nutrients you need. And then focus very heavily on reducing stress through the visualizations in the morning and the evening. Don't lose sight of the visualizations. Okay? And then just give yourself a little bit of time to adjust the stresses in your life. And especially last week about keeping your blood sugar stable, you know, eating frequently healthy meals to keep your blood sugar stable. See how things change over the next couple of weeks. Because otherwise, I can say to you,
was absolutely fabulous.
Well, thank you. You know, a lot of people have said that over the last couple of years I've been doing this. I've had, you know, so many healthcare practitioners, nurses, and even doctors come up to me and say, "That was explained really well. I didn't really think of it that way." So I appreciate you saying that. But you got to give yourself some time to adjust the stresses in your life. And you know, because I could say to you, look, just eat 1,500 calories a day, but unfortunately, it's not sustainable. So you have to find another way to do it. So keep the focus on nourishing your body. Are you getting protein, omega-3, and live food in each meal? And are you reducing your stresses? And let's give it a couple of weeks, okay?
Yeah, okay. I guess then my sort of follow-up question for that is that I'm not sort of getting those signals anymore. I don't really understand when I'm hungry, when I'm supposed to, you know, not eat, stop eating because I'm getting a full signal, all those kinds of things. You know, I go to all the trouble of making this great big huge salad, and it does all the good things in it, and I have about two mouthfuls of it, and then I think I feel full. But then I know probably in half an hour's time I'm going to be hungry again, but I've got a meeting in half an hour. I eat all my salad now, and, you know, I'm just worried that I'm sort of blocking those signals too.
Well, I think it's a little bit, obviously, you know, you've got life issue challenges that you have to work around. The first thing I would say is just have the two bites and that's it. And then if you can have some more in a half hour later, that's perfect. That's a perfect way to be right now. I think that's your body kind of realizing, hey, I'm getting more nourished right now. Maybe I don't need as much food. Maybe I don't need to wait anymore. And kind of feeling your way through it. I would not force yourself to eat, absolutely not. But I would make sure that food's available to you if you're hungry, you know, an hour later. Is there any way you can do that? Okay, that's what I would do.
I can try.
Okay. Good.
Yep, all right. Well, that sounds great.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Next call is Moxie in North Carolina. Moxie, you there?
Hello, John.
Hi,
yes,
Moxie. How are you?
I'm good. Very well.
Good. Excellent.
I have a question about wheatgrass. I really am having difficulty understanding the concept of wheatgrass. It seems to me that if you're eating all your good green vegetables and having a few sprouts, that should be all the life force kind of stuff you need. So what's the special deal about wheatgrass?
I guess in theory that's true, but you would have to eat a lot of greens and vegetables and sprouts to equal the amount of life force and chlorophyll that's in wheatgrass. Because it's all green and it's all concentrated, it's a very powerful detoxifiant, and it's just a very high concentration of life force that you're eating right on the spot. So it is, you don't have to have it if you are getting enough really fresh green, you know, green salads and sprouts, but it's a great boost, you know, and it's a great way to get nourishment right into your body real quick and detoxify and just really energize your body. So if you can do it, great. You don't have to do it, but you will find an enormous difference. You can even test it yourself. See what your eating patterns are like in the day when you've had wheatgrass in the morning versus when you have it, and just see if there's any difference for you.
Mm.
But if you can get...
If I could find any wheatgrass, but I can't.
Okay. Well, you know, also on our site, we just came up with... We've got a soil-free wheatgrass maker. So you don't even need soil. If you're living in an apartment, it'll grow three trays without soil. You just have to put the wheat in and water it. And within like 10 days or 2 weeks or something, you get wheatgrass. Also, if there's a juice bar nearby, if you're in a city and they have a juice bar and you get a shot of wheatgrass, that's one way to do it. I wouldn't stay too focused on it. Wheatgrass is a bonus to me. I mean, it's something that just will really supercharge your cells. But otherwise, if you are eating a lot of sprouts and salads, that's going to help too. Okay?
All right. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Okay. I think we've got some more callers, but I don't have any in my sheet. It's good. It would be good if I can find out who the next caller is. But Sabrina? Okay. So Sabrina from Kansas. And guys that are doing the calls for me, just keep them coming in on my sheet so I know who they are, please. Thanks. So, okay, Sabrina?
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
Great.
So my thing is about emotional obesity. I have a challenge in my marriage, and I don't believe in divorce, so we try to work through our problems, but I know it definitely, I don't know if I want to say causes, but it definitely contributes to my weight gain after we got married. We've been married almost 14 years now. The first year we were married, I gained 100 pounds. Part of that has to do with the thyroid problem that I have, but I know that's not all of it.
Yeah, it's not.
I need to know how...
And I just want to say sometimes the thyroid problems are the result of your body. It's just a mechanism that your body uses to gain weight. So, you know, it's easy to get caught up in the chemistry of stuff as if, you know, you were just like, we're just cars and we need a new spark plug, but there's a lot more going on than that. So sometimes when your body wants to hold on to weight, it's going to create a thyroid issue. So that's I'm glad you understand that. It's really good that you understand that. You said you gained 100 pounds after you got married. There's no question that's a huge issue for you.
Yep.
The first thing I want to ask you is just tell me why you don't believe in divorce.
In my religion, it's not an option. And also, you know, honestly, my husband tries really hard, and I can't fault him for that.
That's right. Okay. So
growing up, it was very abusive, emotionally abusive with my mom. So I think when I got married, I expected to be safe, and I didn't feel safe, and it caused some of these problems.
You know, ironically, sometimes we find that when we've had abusive childhoods, unwittingly, we end up attracting partners that make us, I don't want to say can abuse us, but make us feel that same kind of feeling of where our boundaries are being encroached upon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what I'm feeling with you. I mean, it sounds to me, you know, like you say, your husband's a nice man, he's trying hard, but there's a boundary issue there. You know, you need some space. Your boundaries are kind of being encroached upon, and weight is a way that your body uses to create space between you and your outside environment. It's a buffer. I've lived through that, and a lot of people are living through it, and there's no question that that's what you're experiencing.
Yeah, I really related to your story a lot.
Yeah. If divorce is not an option, is there some way to create space?
I'm not sure. How would I do that?
Do you live in a house? Do you live in an apartment? Do you live in a house? Does it have a? Is there room in the back to create a studio or an apartment where you can live, and then the two of you can come together for dinners, and then when you need, and then you can have your own private space. Is there some arrangement that you can create like that?
No.
Can you say to him, look, I mean, we're married, and I love you, and we're always going to be married, but I need my space. Can you possibly? I mean, do you have to live together? Is that
financially? Yes.
For financial reasons, but not for other reasons. Is that right?
Well, we do have a 1-year-old, so living apart would make it difficult.
Yeah. Okay. So you have a 1-year-old too. You need to create a place or a way to create space for yourself.
Okay.
Now, do you have a garage or something like that?
Uh huh.
Okay. Can you convert that garage to your personal private place, your own little sanctuary?
I think you can convert a part of the basement
for
that. I can use a part of the basement for that.
But not, okay. Does the part of the basement feel like a nice place? Like you could create a nice place there?
Yes.
Does it feel like a place where if you wanted to, you could sleep there on occasion if you wanted to?
Yes.
Okay. Can you do that then?
I can.
All right. So then what I'd like you to do is I would like you to set up that basement as your own private personal space and explain to your husband in a very loving way that what's going to help us is for me to just have a little bit of my own personal space so that I don't feel encroached upon, because the feeling of being encroached upon is making me tight. And so if I'm tight, I can't be as loving toward you. I can't be as loving toward our child. I need some space. I need to be able to feel open and relaxed in space. So I want to create this place, and it's going to help all of us. And then once you do, I would love for you to have a couple of things there. One is a place to sleep there. Make it really nice. Make it beautiful. Make it your own personal sanctuary. Get some really nice books. If you can get a bookshelf and all the books that inspire you and stories that take you away. And I imagine you, lying on your bed and just reading this beautiful story that's taking you all over the world or something that's inspiring you. I would also like you to get some sort of music that you can play there, maybe some tapestries on the wall, and a way to listen to visualizations. And that could be a place where you could listen to, for example, the Living Goddess visualization is a really good one for creating space. And
okay.
Feeling connected. And then even maybe spending some nights there, making it, maybe if you had a kind of, if he was resistant to the idea of you sleeping there, which is natural enough, maybe you say like 2 nights a week or something. You know, that's your special space where you can sleep there 2 nights a week, something like that.
Okay.
You need, that's going to help you just so much, is having space right now. Okay?
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. The other visualization that I think will help a lot that's in the members area is called feeling safe and strong.
Yes, I've used that. I like that.
Yeah. Have those visualizations down there in that special space. And make an intention that this is your special sacred space where all the angels and all your loved ones and maybe any of your departed loved ones would whatever you feel is going to energize you or nourish you, that God is there, that your angels are there, and that they're just all there supporting you. That's your sanctuary. Make it your sanctuary.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you so much.
Cool. You're welcome. Okay, I think we've got Laura from Perth. Laura from Perth.
Hello? Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Hi. I'm just quickly on the, when you're talking about the almond milk.
Yeah.
Do you leave the almonds with the skin on?
Yeah. Absolutely. Because, you just soak them. And then you put them in a bar mixer, and then you strain it through a cheesecloth.
Okay, beautiful.
I just want to say one thing. If you can get a non-bleached cheesecloth, that's important. I don't know why they bleach cheesecloths, but if you get a non-bleached one, that's good. Or a really really tight strainer, is good enough.
Okay. And just normal almonds from the supermarket, or do you need to get organic almonds, or can you get organic?
I think it's important to get organic nuts and seeds in general, because most of the plant stores toxins in its fat cells, and that's where the fat is. The fat's in the nut and the seeds. So when a conventionally farmed plant that's going to have all the pesticides in it, it's going to be storing it in the nut.
Right.
It's definitely more important to get, especially with nuts, to spend the extra few bucks for the organic, definitely.
Okay. When we're talking about fish, I love my smoked salmon. Is that?
Yeah.
That's fine?
Yeah. I mean, look, smoked salmon's good. I mean, some people say smoking's not the best thing in the world. I think that you're still getting, I think, about 30% of the omega-3s in smoked salmon. I eat smoked salmon. So I would say enjoy it. I think it's a good one, yeah.
Right. All right, and just an answer on the omega-3 egg, you know, trying to get, if you have
eggs,
chooks.
Yeah.
Give them just the linseed seed or, again, grind it up?
No, you don't have to grind them. You can give them the whole seeds. They can digest them.
So you can give them the whole seeds?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's all. Thank you, John.
Yeah, they love them.
Fantastic.
My pleasure. Okay.
Okay,
we'll talk soon. Okay. All right, we'll take a couple more. Neil, are you still there, by the way?
Yeah, I'm still here, John.
All right, good. Appreciate you hanging in there. So we'll take a couple more, and then we'll have to wrap it up. So the next one's Sue in Melbourne.
Oh, hi, how are you?
Good, how are you, Sue?
Pretty good, thanks, John. I've just got a quick question for you. I know you talk a lot about salads and leafy green vegetable,
yeah.
You know, things like that to put in your salad.
Yeah.
My daughter's a bit of a salad dodger. So I was wondering what you stand on vegetables. Is that fine if she just has steamed vegetables instead or not?
How old is your daughter?
17.
17. Yeah, just introduce as much, whatever you can. You know, I try not to be too dogmatic about things. Just anything that's going to be healthier than what she's having now. So steamed vegetables are going to be healthier than, you know, if she's eating chips and french fries and things like that. So absolutely,
okay.
You know, just whatever ways you can introduce health to her.
Yeah, and just one, is it okay if you stir fry them or not?
Yeah, I would use coconut oil.
Yep.
Or ghee.
Beautiful.
Because they won't get corrupted in high temperatures. Yeah.
So coconut oil or ghee is fine?
Yeah. You're losing a little bit of the live component, but you can make it up other ways. For example, you might want to see if she likes fresh squeezed juices in the morning. Like, my daughter's a little bit of a salad dodger, too, but I can give her a fresh squeezed apple juice in the morning. She doesn't mind that.
Yeah.
So
no,
you can try to get it in other ways, or fruit, or just keep fruit around, see if she'll eat fruit, you know.
Oh, no, she's good on the fruit. It's just like I said, the salad.
She's good on the fruit.
That's fine.
Then you're good. Yeah, then just make sure she's eating fruit, and steamed veggies are great then, yeah. and so is stir fry.
Beautiful.
It's a fine.
Okay. Thanks a lot, John.
Cool.
Bye.
My pleasure. Bye.
You know, John, one of the things I do for my kids that really helps, like I said, I've got a 6-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 1.5-year-old. And and they are pretty good about eating their vegetables. They really are. And I think the sooner you can start introducing those things and just putting them on the plate, the more they warm up to them. But one thing that I do is I make a lot of different shakes, and I put them in the blender. And you can throw all kinds of things in that blender. And
everything
with stuff, blueberries and strawberries. And then you can go ahead and put, you know, different greens and stuff like that in there.
That's
and
true.
Mix them up. And it tastes really good. And those kids, they drink it. They call them they're milkshakes as far as they're concerned. And they drink them right down. So that might be another way to get that good stuff in.
It's true. You have to be careful of the ratios. You know, like I find I try to do that too. I'll make a blueberry shake and put a little bit of spirulina or some greens in there. And you put too much in, and then they get the idea that they don't like it. So you have to play around with it. But that's a milkshake is the best way. A healthy milkshake is the best way to get nutrients into young kids. That's what I'm finding too.
Yeah, they love it. Even the 1.5-year-old, I fire up that blender and I turn around and there's 3 of them pulling on my shirt. But they come to really enjoy it. So
definitely cool. All right, I'll take a couple more callers here, and we've got Catherine in Brisbane.
Hi John, how are you?
Hi.
Hello, hi John.
Hi Catherine, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. I just wanted to ask you a quick question. I'm one of these people who used to be a very poor breakfast eater. So consequently, I did pick a lot after my evening meals. So I've changed that around quite considerably. And I eat a good breakfast. I can be great during the day. And when I'm getting dinner at night, there's only my children have all left home. They're adults. And there's my husband and myself at home. And I'm getting dinner and I feel like I'll have a wine and I might have 2 or 3 wines and which is, you know, I probably shouldn't have any, but I enjoy them. But then I find if I've had wine, I start to get peckish about 9, 9:30 and I'm looking for either chocolate or I'm looking for biscuits, carbohydrates. Is it the wine that causes...
You're asking me if it's, I'm right here, sweetheart. You're asking me if it's the wine that's causing that. Is that right?
Yes.
That's the first question.
Right.
Okay. So what about other nights that you don't drink that much? Do you notice any difference?
I do find it easier if I don't drink to not eat after dinner.
Yeah. And before you started changing your breakfast, you also still had those cravings, right? Did you have more of a cravings or less of a cravings?
Oh, more before I started, you know, improving what I was eating at the beginning of the day.
And when did you start improving that? When did that happen?
In the last couple of years, I have eaten better. You know, I do make myself have breakfast. Prior to that, I wouldn't eat anything probably till 11 o'clock in the morning. But I do eat my breakfast now.
I would argue that it's a combination of stress and wine because the stress may be causing you to drink the wine, you know, and the stress is what's causing the cravings too. So because of that, I would say I would keep a focus on doing the visualization in the mornings and maybe even if you have a little bit of time, doing a visualization in the afternoon. Like I would recommend taking like around 3 o'clock, having a snack at 3 o'clock and listening to a visualization. I would say, you know which one? I would recommend the last one in that series. Having a great life or living a prosperous life. In the series of the members, there's a whole bunch of them, and the last one is like living a great life or something like that. Just something that's just energizing and revitalizing. That, I would listen to that one. I would have a snack at 3 o'clock and listen to that visualization CD, and then I would notice how you are after dinner, whether or not you're craving, whether or not you're wanting wine, whether or not you drink the wine, and whether or not you have junk food cravings. My guess is if you do that around 3 or 4 o'clock, you're going to be calmer. You're going to take care of that stress. You see, your survival strategy for years and years and years when you had stress is to calm down at the end of the day with a glass of wine. And have something to eat, and that's fine. But if you do this also, you'll find that by the end of the day, you're not going to be as stressed out, and you're probably not going to be craving as much wine or junk food. So I would notice, try to do that. Just impose or start the habit of every day at 3 or 4 o'clock have this snack and a visualization, and notice how you feel at the end of the day, whether or not you have the wine cravings or the junk food cravings.
Do you feel that that's my fat trigger?
I do, yes, but I feel like I do. What I feel is that it's triggered by stress. I think the wine, you know, look, having a glass of wine is one thing. Having three glasses of wine means that there's some stress there, and there's a need there to relieve the stress. And then also having the junk food cravings, there's stress there. So I would say have this stress reduction break around 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And just see if those cravings go away on both sides, for both the extra wine and the junk food. Okay.
Thank you very much, John.
Yeah, my pleasure. Okay.
Bye-bye.
We'll talk again soon. Bye. Okay, Tad. I got Tad in California.
Hi, John.
Hi, Tad. How are you?
Oh, working through some issues actually, but well. I started your program, I don't know, I guess it was a year and a half ago, and I was actually out of the country at the time when I started it. I travel a fair amount, and I had some success in the beginning, and it worked pretty well, but one of the things that made me stop was stomach aches. My body just does not like, you know, the rough itch, I guess, of the vegetables. And if salads are okay, I, you know, actually like a Caesar salad at night, and I'm kind of like into those right now. But I noticed when I introduced the wheatgrass and I went to like a Jamba Juice and got a berry mixed drink of theirs, that I had stomach aches within like an hour of that whole process.
Yeah.
So I was wondering what your thoughts were on that, and I think I probably know the answer, but I'd like to hear your answer for that.
Yeah. Stomach aches, when you drink wheatgrass juice, stomach aches are common right afterwards, and the reason is because it's such a powerful detoxifier that you're actually releasing toxins that are stored in your stomach so that your body can flush them out. So that's where you're getting a stomach ache. I don't know much about the guava juice, but it must have some kind of very powerful detoxification factor. You also said that there were certain vegetables that caused a stomach ache. Is that right? Or were you
I noticed when I did this before that when I introduced a lot more vegetables into my diet, that I had these same. It was like a low grade constant stomach ache.
Okay, but the
it didn't go away until, you know, I did or introduced, you know, some bad foods in there, and then my body goes, okay, I'm happy now.
Okay, but the salad, you say salad doesn't bother you, right?
No, I've been really into, like, Caesar salads. I've been making my own Caesar dressing with olive oil and egg.
Listen, if you're eating green leafy vegetables, you're getting everything you need.
Right.
I don't need you to eat any other vegetables. As long as you're eating enough salad, green leafy vegetables, then you're getting everything you need. Have you tried things like probiotics and digestive enzymes?
Yeah, I was taking those, and I just started taking those again. They didn't seem to affect the problem much at all.
Uh-huh. Now, I would say stick with salads.
Stick
with the green leafy salads. I don't eat a lot of vegetables other than salad either, because between that and my fruit, and then, you know, I also do have wheatgrass when I can. I get everything I need. I don't crave any. I don't have to have. I mean, occasionally I eat it if it's served, but I don't have to have things like broccoli and cauliflower and tomatoes and these things. You know, I don't think there's anything essential in them. But if you're eating lots of green leafy vegetables, you're getting everything you need.
Okay. And my other question was, I don't know if you've heard of this report that just came out of the British Medical Institute, where they did a study on type 2 diabetes, which I have, where they restricted the calorie diet to like 600 calories a day for, I think it was 3 months, 12 weeks, and the diabetes went away. wondering what your thoughts were on that, if you've heard about that, and whether or not that would be a good thing to do to get rid of the insulin resistance as part of this.
That's a short-term fix. I'd like to see where those people are 3 months later after they're no longer eating that low-calorie diet, because that'll keep your blood sugar in check. Because type 2 diabetes is more a function of where your blood sugar is than actually how your insulin resistance. And what they're testing is how well your body handles blood sugar. And if you're only having 600 calories a day, you're not getting enough blood sugar to elevate your blood sugar.
Well,
so,
their take on it was that the pancreas had got fat around it or in it, and that's what was causing the diabetes. And going on in that restricted diet, from what I understood, what I read, then the fat was removed from the pancreas, and then everything functioned normally after that.
There may be some truth to that part of it, but I have a little bit of an issue with it, because the main component of type 2 diabetes is how sensitive the cells are to insulin, not to how effective the pancreas is at producing the insulin.
Okay.
So there's a couple of inconsistencies in there, and something about it doesn't sound sustainable. But in general, detoxing and eating the foods that I'm recommending that reverse the insulin resistance usually takes care of the type 2 diabetes.
And one last question. I have a bunch, but I know you need to go. Is I really have trouble doing the visualization in the morning, and it seems like, especially in the morning, I have a hard time because I'm starting to focus on my day, and I get distracted very easily. And it's hard for me to get up and do it. So I actually do it laying in bed. I know you said not to do that, but.
Okay.
That's the way I do it. But anyway, so it kind of gives me a chance to, you know, wake up and get going.
That's
but
okay.
I have a real problem with the AM visualization. I was wondering if you had any hints.
Because you get distracted?
Yeah.
I would say let yourself get distracted for now. Okay, don't try to force it or hold on to it. As long as you're listening to it, there's going to be lots of positive suggestions. The actual music is going to lower your stress level and keep you calm and clear. And tremendously benefit your day. So don't worry about getting distracted.
Okay, cool. Thank
okay?
you.
Cool. All right. We're just going to take one more. You too. Thank you, Ted. We'll talk soon. I got one more caller we're going to take, and then we're going to finish up. So there's Patty from New Mexico calling.
Hey, Don.
Hey, Patty.
I'm really pleased with the program so far, so just keep
Great.
Up the good work. I'll
Great.
Try to keep this
Thanks.
Quick. Just a couple of kind of housekeeping questions. We've
yes.
talked about other different kinds of milks and stuff. Hemp milk. I've got a version that has a very low carb, no added sugar and stuff.
Yeah,
I think that's probably a good one. Okay.
Yeah, that's probably a good one. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm okay with that, definitely.
Good.
But can you just make sure that they don't add, like, a lot of sugar. So you said it's a low-carb
diet. Yeah. I've looked at the ingredients, so it's a good one.
Yeah.
The other thing, I'm probably, like, sort of pre-diabetic, but I'm a nurse, and I'm doing my own. I'm watching my blood sugars a lot, and I've been able to bring them down a lot. I am on metformin, and I know you had talked about insulin and its effect on blood sugars. Can you say anything, or do you have any insight on how metformin affects in terms of if it – makes it harder to lose fat or do the fat burning.
What is metformin for? What is metformin?
Metformin, they use it, it's sort of the first line for diabetics, but it's also, they're using it a lot now for insulin resistance, pre-diabetics and stuff. It makes the liver not make so much blood sugar raises and things.
Okay, so it's affecting your blood sugar the way you... Okay, I would rather do that through natural means. I mean, there's a lot of ways to keep your blood sugar stable. Like for example, having protein, having wheatgrass juice, having live food. Those things are going to keep your blood sugar stable. And any type of drug you take is going to have a toxic effect in one way or the other, and that's going to load the liver up with toxins, and increase your overall toxic load. And so that'll affect your insulin resistance in a whole nother way, because toxins do cause insulin resistance. So I would definitely want to do it through natural means if at all possible. But again, you got to go with what your doctor recommends.
And as I'm weaning off of that, because I am, and my blood sugars have improved a lot, especially using a lot of the things that you're recommending, exercise, what I'm noticing is I'm watching my blood sugars and everything just kind of before and after just to see what my behavioral effects have on my blood sugar. Sometimes I think, you know, I go to the gym and you would think, okay, I'm going to work my blood sugar down. And there are times when it goes up after that, and it's not related to the food. But I think, is there an effect in terms of overtraining that then, because it's usually when I'm, like, working really hard.
Overtraining will,
my cortisol then, or?
Yeah, overtraining will elevate your blood sugar. There's no question about it, because it's going to elevate your cortisol levels, and cortisol will elevate your blood sugar. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's exactly it. Yeah.
Do you see a difference between if I'm trying to use exercise to lower my blood sugar? What I notice sometimes is that muscle training or strength training actually does better about dropping my blood sugar than aerobics. Do you have any biophysical reason for that?
Absolutely. And the reason is because if you look at the muscle as a sponge, and where the water is sugar, so your muscles hold sugar, store sugar, and when you do strength training, it's like taking the muscle or taking a sponge and wringing it out. And then when you do that, the muscle then wants to suck sugar up. It becomes like a sponge to suck sugar up. It becomes more sensitive to insulin because it wants to suck sugar up, and that will then lower your blood sugar because your muscle so wants and needs the sugar to rebuild the muscle.
Okay. That makes sense then. Cool. And one last quick thing in terms of food, because I know we have, again, with the live food, and I'm loving that because I did some raw food kind of stuff last year, so I love how you're incorporating that into the program. There's a lot of fruit and things on there, and you see sometimes that people who are pre-diabetic or whatever are more sensitive to that. Should I make an effort to kind of stay away from the fruit a little more, you know, still have it every now and then, but focus more on the vegetables as opposed to the fruit, or does it really matter if I'm doing the rest of the components of the Gabriel method?
I would say modern conventional day wisdom would say stay away from the fruit, but I personally, and again, I'm not a doctor and go by what your doctor says, I personally don't agree. I think our bodies understand fruits. Our bodies know how to process fruit, and fruit has so many beneficial aspects to it, such as essential sugars that you can't get anywhere else, and nutrients that are very highly digestible. And the way the sugar goes into your system, very few, unless it's dried fruit, like dried dates or something like that, but if you're talking about apples and oranges and even watermelon, to me, the way the fruit goes into your system, it doesn't overwhelm your body. So I think the biggest problem is when you eat things like bread and man-made foods, it causes an exaggerated insulin response because of how quick it goes in initially. Your body thinks that you're going to get much more sugar than you're actually going to get, but fruit doesn't trick you, so it doesn't create that exaggerated insulin response.
Excellent. Okay. Just in terms of at some point, if you guys can address some of the folks who work night shifts and everything, and if there's tips and tricks and things, you know, if there's not a way that we can get off a night shift and everything, how we can best deal with it and minimize our cortisol impulses and all that.
Okay. I'm going to do that right now. Hey, Neil?
Yep, I'm here.
Neil, can you make a note that when we do our weekly blog on Monday, that we address night shift?
Absolutely.
All right. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to definitely talk about that on our weekly blog. So Patty, thanks very much.
Thank you. You guys rock. Keep it up.
All right. Thank you very much. So we'll be in touch soon. So Neil, we just have a couple of minutes. I think that's it for this week. Is there anything you wanted to add or any other thoughts or questions?
You know, I was just noticing sitting here listening to everybody's questions, and it's interesting, though we have a lot of the same questions, but it's also interesting that everybody's kind of got to find their own special fit as to how all this information is going to apply to them and the special things that they need to do. And I think, you know, that's the importance of using these Q&As to get your specific, you know, questions answered. But, yeah, it's got to be hand-tailored, really, a little bit for everybody, and you got to find what works for you.
Well, that's why we're here. You know, that's why we're doing this program. I mean, there's a lot of information, and how not everything applies to everybody, but a lot of things apply to a lot of people, and then how to tailor fit. That's exactly what we're doing. So good. So all right. So we'll have our video blog. It'll show up on Tuesday, right before the next class. The next class, core lesson number 3, is going to be on digestion and detoxification. And any other questions that you have after this class or over the weekend, email them to us, and we'll try to address them in the video blog. Okay, so Neil, I think that's going to be it for us. And all right, so we'll speak early next week, and we'll do the video blog. Okay, Neil?
All right, very well. Good talking to you, John.
All right, great. Everybody, thanks very much for listening. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.